This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Listening to the Who Are You Wearing podcast, I'm comedian Kiri Pritchard-McLean. I love clothes, I love fashion, I love how people express themselves through their outfits, and most of all, I love speaking to stylish folk about their clothes. Episode 12 of Series 3 is with author and journalist Porna Bell, and it was recorded in April of 2023. Oh, she has such a fascinating viewpoint when it comes to style and aging, particularly when you hit sort of your late 30s, early 40s. That section of the conversation that we had, I think about it. I've been thinking about it a lot since, about how it's a transitional stage and it's sort of how you greet that, how you deal with it. Porna is another teenage goth, so yes, another tick in the column of all the teenage goths and emos who've ended up being very stylish adults. She also has definitely defined a style in this episode. A new phrase for you, modern grown-up goth. That is it. We all know as soon as I said what it is. It needed a name. We didn't have one before. Thank you so much. Porna is so bright and thoughtful, and I'm really grateful for her viewpoint, particularly on the fetishization that sneaks into certain styles as well. It was just a fascinating conversation. And I know this isn't why people listen to the podcast, but I've got to say, she has one of the most beautiful voices I have ever heard. This episode is as relaxing as it is fascinating. This is a smart, stylish woman. So sit back and enjoy me asking Porna Bell, who are you wearing?
I was sort of maybe about 7 or 8, probably 8. And for me, the big thing was that I could never really find clothes in my size because I was pretty small child. I didn't know this at the time, but I had a undiagnosed heart condition. So I was generally quite small for my age, and sort of around between the ages of 7 to 12, my family and I, we'd moved to India because my parents had decided that we were going to be raised there, and that they, you know, my parents didn't really want us to grow up being British children. So at that time, I remember having a greater awareness of, you know, the outfits that I would have. I had quite short hair at the time. I was a little bit tomboyish, you know, quite active as a kid. But I do remember that whenever we would go shopping for clothes for my sister, there would just be like nothing really that I could wear. And so I had this one outfit that I remember that I found, which were these long Bermuda shorts with a vest. I have a picture of it. It looks hideous, but at the time I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And I had a baseball cap that my dad had bought me, and I just thought that the whole outfit just looked, you know, amazing. But my memories at that time were either outfits like that, so quite tomboyish outfits, or you know, we had a party that I think was my sister's birthday, and my mum had us outfits specially made for it. These were Indian outfits, and I think my sister had a purple version and I had a green version, and the name for it, so they're called lengas. That's the That's the Indian word for it. And so essentially it's kind of like, you know, a shortish crop top and a skirt, but they're like, you know, luxurious materials, like embroidered and so on. And I think that was the first time that I'd ever had something actually specifically made for me. And I was just obsessed with that outfit. I wanted to wear it all the time. Mm. But it's hilarious given that in my teen years and for most, if not all of my 20s, I really resisted wearing Indian clothes.
Wow. So we're going to come back to that for sure. But so as a kid then, you know, this Bermuda short outfit and this beautiful green Indian outfit, were you showing a strong sense of style of what you liked?
I've always had, as long as I can remember, I've always been very specific and very focused about what I know. I know what I like and I know what I don't like. And that's something I've always known since I was young. And so what became very evident as I got older was my sister and my mother are not like that. And so there would be so many shopping trips where I'd be dragged around and I would know instantly what I would want or what I wouldn't want. And these two people would just take what seemed like an ice age to just pick something. And then I realized that I'm more like my dad. So my dad is also very similar in that he's very specific. He will know what he likes to wear and what he doesn't. And he's very quick. I could not tell you, I could not pinpoint what exactly happened to sort of make me go in that direction. But I've always had a sense of what I've wanted to wear and what I think, not just what will suit me, because that's, you know, that's such a broad interpretation, right? But like what makes me feel good when I'm wearing it. And I definitely knew the clothes that did not make me feel good when I was wearing it that I just absolutely hated.
Who was dressing you? Do you say your sister's older than you?
Yeah, so she is just over 4 years older than me. No, it was not her.
So, were mum and sister, like who was the influence, or was it you leading the way with that stuff?
I think it was definitely, I don't ever remember my mum saying, you have to wear this, this is what you're going to wear. Like, that's just not my mum's, you know, way at all. I just remember us being, it was a sort of collaborative experience. By no means does that mean, you know, you go into a shop and you're like, mummy, I will take all of those clothes, because we didn't have very much money when I was growing up. So it wasn't that at all. But it was very much a sort of a collaboration of my input of what it is that I wanted to wear. And you know, whatever it is that my mum's budget could kind of stretch to. And I think because we had that split upbringing of, you know, a childhood that was partly in England, then in India, then in England again, there was definitely a sort of a distinction between, I guess, even if you look at things like tailoring or how clothes are made, I think the clothes that kind of came from England were clothes that I gravitated more towards because they just seemed to fit me better. Whereas, you know, the idea of, for example, going to like malls didn't exist in Bangalore, which is where we grew up and spent our time in India, you know, in the late 1980s. So it was very much that I had a sense of what I felt comfortable in and what I didn't. And I knew that from quite a young age.
Did you have an outfit then that you put on that just clicked with you that you never wanted to take off?
I would say no is the answer to that, mainly because I couldn't sort of pick out one iconic outfit to tell you, oh my God, it was this and it was my second skin. However, the memory that I am going to share with you is when I was, I think, 3 or 4, and my sister, you know, would have been around 8. She was selected to be a flower girl at a wedding. And what that meant was she got to wear a pink frilly outfit. And I saw this outfit and I just lost my shit. And I just could not understand why I wasn't a flower girl. But I remember it was about the outfit, to be honest. So I demanded that I have a picture taken with me wearing the outfit, but I was clearly like not over it. I hadn't forgiven anyone. So you have this like very cute girl in this pink dress looking so pissed off. And that photograph, yeah, it's just like, it's, I mean, I just, you know, the look on my face is just, I'm never going to forgive you for this, even though you've let me wear the outfit and someone's taken a picture of me.
Even though it's a photo shoot that you demanded.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. When you were a teenager then, What were the big trends? And were you someone who experimented with them, or were you off doing your own thing, or did it pass you by, and you know, did fashion grab you a little bit later?
So I was listening to your episode with Lolly Adefope, and I kind of had like a very similar experience to her. So in my teen years, I was a sort of a mixture between a goth girl and an alternative kid. So I definitely didn't have the, you know, I wasn't a Spice Girls girl, is what I would say. And so the kind of the music that we listened to and the subculture around that and how you would dress is something that it just clicked with me immediately. And the friends that I had at school also, you know, were into some iteration of that, whether it was grunge or whether it was punk or whatever. And you know, we sort of like walked around together dressed. I think we thought we looked really cool, but we just probably looked like we just picked stuff out of a garbage bin. But so I definitely remember pushing against that. I didn't want to look like everyone else. I wanted to be able to put my own sense of style together. But there was also something, you know, I guess, I mean, you say it's nonconformist, and then you go to, I don't know, a Nirvana gig, and then there's like 300 people dressed exactly like you, and you're like, yeah, man, subversive. So, but it was very much, I would say, for me, what I've always loved, like even sort of early back then, was definitely things like fishnets and leather and PVC and netting and lace and, you know, baggy band t-shirts and all of that stuff and big, huge, big steel toe cap boots. And that was pretty much most of my look for my teenage years. And the fact that you would go into town and there would be sort of these townies who would just, you know, yell at you, kind of in a weird way actually like strengthened your resolve that what you were doing was a good thing, because it wasn't necessarily accepted by everyone else. So yeah, but my long-suffering parents. Yeah.
And were they, I mean, it sounds like a little bit of a rebellious phase in that case, but so it was showing up in your style like that. Was, you say your long-suffering parents, were they giving you anything to rebel against, or were they like, go for it, fill your boots, your steel toe cap boots?
I mean, no, not really, because they didn't really say anything. I mean, I think there was one time when I bought a skirt from Topshop, and it had this, it was this leather skirt, and it had this slit that was really high. But at the time, I thought it was, you know, like a grandma's side slit or something. And I've now seen pictures of that, by the way, recently, and I was like, oh wow, okay, yeah. But at the time, they just said, look, you know, you need to think about whether or not you want to wear that skirt and what it says about you. And I just thought, yeah, it says I'm cool, but obviously, you know, I didn't say that to them. But they did, you know, the with the fishnets, with everything, they just allowed me to do it. And that definitely, I would say, given that, you know, I come from a South Asian family, that was unusual, because generally our families tend to be a lot more conservative, you know. I don't know that anyone's parents really love their kid dressing up in PVC, but again, they didn't really say anything. They'd let me go to gigs within reason. And I think that the neighbors, when they, when on the day that I sort of stopped wearing fishnets, the neighbors said to my mum, oh my gosh, you stopped wearing fishnets. And my mum just, and it was like a cause for celebration around the clothes. But I wasn't rebelling against them. I think I was just rebelling against society in general. And that just, even just saying those words out loud just makes me want to die inside slightly.
No, but I think it's really interesting that you might not be rebelling against them, but it is what you were doing is counterculture. Because I know you're saying this, you know, 300 people dressed the same, but you're probably in a school of 1,000 people. Do you know what I mean? Like, you still would have been in the minority of kids trying to work out how they show the world who they are through what they wear. And I remember as that exact feeling of being shouted at by the we used to call them townies as well. And they were all the kids that I thought were horrible. I thought they were stupid. You know, I was like, they're deadbeats. I sort of felt very vindicated by the fact that I'm like, oh no, you know, I'm destined for greater things because I've ripped my own jeans and backed them with chicken wire, which would lacerate my legs.
Hey, I mean, that sounds super creative. I wish I'd thought of that. I thought the height of creativity for me was taking a pair of tights that had holes in them and cutting through the crotch and then putting my arms through the leg holes and basically wearing it like a bolero. And I was like, oh my God, like any minute now I'm going to get an MBE for like services to fashion because this is so cool. I know.
I love it.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
When I've seen you and your gorgeous outfits on the gram, something I think is interesting, when you rattled off all the things you wore, PVC, you know, that like lace, tulle, fishnets, you know, leather, pleather, that it's, there's loads of texture in there. And I still think that that love affair and interest in texture and contrast like that, that is still, it still exists. That's not something that's like totally gone behind. Yeah. So I want to ask you, the style that we see now, when did that start showing up?
So the style that you see now, I think probably my very late 30s, because for a few reasons, because I kind of feel it's important to say this, which is that, you know, it's sort of quite a common thing, I think, as women sort of reach their late 30s and definitely, you know, early 40s, where something happens which is really destabilizing to your core and your sense of self. And so it's almost like we are at a time where, being that age, we don't have a template for it, particularly in your 40s, because, you know, I was going through some old family photos the other day when I was visiting my parents and looking at how my mum was a very stylish, you know, lady. That's not to say she's not now, but I mean, her style back then was something else. But how she looked in her 40s and how she dressed in her 40s is not how my sister and I dress in our 40s. And so what you're really trying to do is you're trying to assemble something or an identity that's not based on anything that really came before, because we're just trying to figure this stuff out. And at the same time as you are sort of in a really good way, I think, you know, doubling down on, I don't know, confidence at work and confidence around certain other things and just knowing your own mind a bit more, there's this massive dissonance, because you live in a society that just literally lives to scrub old women out of the sort of the general mainstream, right? Or spins this narrative which tells you that the older that you get, the diminishing the returns are around your physical ability, your physical attractiveness, all of that stuff. So something I have seen that is a commonality in other women is that they just don't know, because how you dress, it's not just the clothes that you put on, it's an expression of self, and it's about how you feel within yourself. So it's unsurprising to me that a lot of people come up into this decade and then just don't know what to do. Like, it's literally as if they've never encountered clothes before and they have no sense of it, because it's not just about, you know, where do I shop and what do I buy? It's like, who am I? And how do I express this very fundamental part of myself through clothes in a way that I haven't had to really consider before? And I think for me, it really, there was sort of two things that I think have helped navigate me through this, which I think was the understanding that I have always more or less dressed for myself to a certain degree, and or for other women, right? I've never really dressed for a man, if I'm being honest. But it was sort of the realization that the rules that we are told that we need to abide by in order to tick these boxes of attractiveness or acceptability or to be validated by society are a crock of shit. Because even if you abide by all of the rules, you still are never going to win. Mm. You can't win that game, and nor is it a game that you should want to play. So I think when I kind of realized that, I was like, oh, there's actually a real sense of relief around that. Because if the main person that I have to get that validation from is myself, can I look myself in the mirror every night and be okay with the person that I am? Then really the only person who gets a say in any of that, including how I dress and how I present myself and what makes me feel powerful and good in that, is me. You know, if someone compliments me on what I wear, brilliant. But I'm not dressing in a particular way because I'm fishing for compliments. I'm dressing in a way because I already know I feel I look good in that, regardless of what anyone says about that. But the second thing alongside that was also actually, in a weird way, it's moving forward in age, but it's also, I think, a reclamation of my teenage self, which sounds really bizarre. But I think I kind of felt like there was so much I loved about how I dressed as a teenager, right? Even though I literally had a shoestring budget, I would save up, you know, from Saturday jobs and from pocket money or whatever. And I would take the train. We lived in the suburbs. I would take the train into London. I'd go to High Street Kensington, you know, to all of those like alternative clothing markets, or I'd go to Camden and I'd piece together like outfits and I'd piece together things, you know, with not very much money. But the textures and those fabrics and that look, that slight edginess and that sense of fearlessness of dressing exactly because you like something and because you have a vision of how you want to look versus what someone else might say about it, I realized that I had missed that, you know, and I wanted to kind of reclaim that feeling and that sense of adventure. And so actually, that's why you might see certain fabrics or certain things, for example, that I might wear. Because I realized that was actually a really fun time to dress. And there is a way of doing grown-up goth, you know, in a way. I think you said in one of your podcasts that doesn't necessarily belie the patchouli lifestyle that we all have had some experience with in the past. I think that there's a way of doing it that looks modern and classy and edgy and beautiful. So that for me is what I strive towards in it. Some of it absolutely horrifies people, for sure. I think I bought a leather harness about 6 months ago, and I think some people just didn't know what to make of it. And I was like, well, that's okay, because it's not for you. It's because I think it looks good. And I saw it on TikTok, and it's okay to be inspired by stuff like
that. Yeah. I also think that like modern grown-up goth, as I'm calling it, based on your words, is a exciting and really cool mix of the soft with the harsh and the masculine and the feminine and the kind of stripped downness of, you've got black, which is, you know, but there's loads of flamboyance in the accessories and the edge. And yeah, I think it's such a great broad church in terms of as a way to dress.
Yeah, I think so. And also because I think when I was younger, you know, being a goth girl, and, you know, to anyone who is like this, I really don't mean this in an offensive way, but definitely in the 90s, being a goth girl, I think, was just hypersexualized, you know, in terms of like, don't get me wrong, there are things that I might like to wear that might not involve very much clothing, but I don't want to dress like that all the time. And I definitely think that there has been a modern interpretation of what that goth girl looks like, which are like oversized shirts, you know, maybe with like a very loose like leather corset or a leather harness, or really high like turtleneck jumpers that are kind of slightly deconstructed. And so that is something I really, really love, because I definitely don't remember that existing back in the day. And if it was, you know, I definitely wasn't aware of it. But I do love the fact that there is so much more choice and interpretation for how you might want that look to go. And also, I've seen a ton of fashion accounts that tap into that on Instagram, and I absolutely love it, because it means that I don't necessarily have to wear something super tiny and super skimpy in order to do that look.
Are there any trends that you've had a good crack at a few times now, but it's just not happening for you. Or items of clothing that you're like, this will be the incarnation that it finally happens for me.
Okay, so anything that involves an empire line makes me look like a haunted doll from like a Nicole Kidman horror film. I'm sorry. It's just, I cannot pull it off. I just cannot. And anything that, you know, I feel like these were in fashion maybe a couple of years ago, but those, again, like empire line, like mini dresses with like huge puffball sleeves. So anything, yeah, right. So anything with like a huge sleeve, because I tend to have quite broad shoulders anyway, that has thankfully increased since I started lifting weights. But what it means is I can't wear anything that's like super structured around my shoulders, because I will literally look like a triangle in a quality street. It's just not, it's not flattering at all. So so that's definitely one of them. But also the sack dress is a trend that, if I'm being very honest with you, I only tried it once and I just couldn't. I still don't, I understand what it means to other people in terms of comfortability, but on me, it just looks horrendous. I just can't pull it off in any shape or form. I just look like I borrowed, you know, someone else's dress and have tried it on. Yeah.
You've got a sort of middle distance stare as you're talking about this, like you're remembering yourself in that.
It's just, the thing is, I mean, as a trend, I think it's a brilliant trend, because I think that on the one hand, I think it allowed women to dress in a particular way that was not for the male gaze. And that was really comfortable, right? Like really, really comfortable. And I'm so conflicted, because on the one hand, I'm so glad that that trend actually happened. But on the other hand, I just know that I could not wear that ever. Like, it's just not something that that is ever going to suit me. And that's something I feel sad about, but maybe it's just that my version of like comfort just has to come from a different trend, yeah. Not that one.
We don't have to have everything, do we? There's some things that we just have, we can let go. I'm interested in what you said about, you know, since you've been lifting weights, if your physicality has changed, has that changed your relationship with clothes as well?
Yes and no, in that I think that, so I'm very similar to my mother in terms of, you know, our bodies are very similar, like where we would put on muscle, our proportions and so on. And so I know that my mum kind of has the same thing in terms of there are certain jackets or it's a particular cut that just makes us look very boxy at the top. And so since lifting weights, that has obviously become more pronounced, I would say, for me. And what I have had to learn is there are certain styles that will flatter me more than ones that don't. And when I say flatter, I don't mean makes me look slimmer or any of that kind of like stuff. I mean, like, it just suits the lines of my body better. I was told that I have an hourglass figure, which is really lovely to hear. However, if you have that kind of figure, there is a way of how you can accentuate and flatter that, I think, a bit, which I didn't really understand before. So what was happening was I was trying to still wear the dresses that I had previously and not understanding why I felt very uncomfortable in them, because they just didn't fit in the same places that they used to. I mean, that's actually the fundamental of it, right? And so I think one of the biggest understandings, especially with my body changing, is that if something doesn't fit me, that's not a me problem. That just means it can be a neutral concept, and it can just be as simple as me going, that doesn't fit me anymore. I'm going to give it to charity. I'm going to give it to someone else who's going to use it, and I'm going to get something that actually fits me a bit better. So it's probably made my relationship with my body and clothes a bit healthier, because I don't think I berate it as much as I used to. And I think that I just want it to be comfortable, and I just want it to feel good, because if it doesn't feel good, then my mind isn't going to feel great within that. So it's probably made me, I think, a bit more appreciative of that connection in terms of, I mean, it's such an obvious one, isn't it? But, you know, how you feel physically will impact how you feel mentally.
And I appreciate you sort of clarifying when you say flattering, because so often I think that you know, the generation of women that we fall in has been taught to mean that flatter means smaller. You know, like, oh, it's flattering means it's making you look like there's less of you. And I think we're all doing a lot of sort of thinking about that. And actually, that's not what we necessarily want that word to mean anymore. And more, it can accentuate the things that you really love as opposed to hide all the things that you hate.
Yeah, it's exactly that. So, yes, absolutely. So when I say flattering, for example, what I'm referring to is understanding that something that, let's say, is a halter neck is going to make my shoulders look absolutely banging because I can then see the muscle definition on it. Now, whether or not someone else thinks that that's attractive, I could not care less about that. It makes me feel, when I look in the mirror and I see like how strong my shoulders look in that reflection, that's something that I think looks good on me. I think the obsession that we kind of have, you know, particularly around around clothing has become so loaded, I think, for women of my age and older, is seeing it as like a badge of honor if you can kind of fit into the clothes that you had like 10 mm-hmm. years ago, 20 years ago, like that says something about you. And I just think, it says nothing. Like, what does it say about you that's of value? It says absolutely nothing. It doesn't speak to the life that you've had. It doesn't speak to, you know, whether or not you've had children, mm-hmm. the things that you've overcome, the things that you've accomplished. So when I do have friends that say that to me now, I just take the easy route and I just don't say anything. I don't say, oh, well done or whatever, because it's not something, I don't think it's an achievement. I just think that, you know, if we can kind of remove that from it, I think that we would have a much better relationship with clothes, and particularly as our bodies get older and change and redefine in different ways.
Mm. That's so well expressed. It's going to make my next question sound more loaded than it's meant to, which is, is there any item of clothing you've had for a long time that you still love to wear, but not in a, do you still fit in those jeans way? Just...
No, but for a couple of reasons, which is that I regularly declutter my wardrobe. So I will literally do this every three is maybe a bit ambitious. I will do this about every 4 to 6 months. So there is nothing in my wardrobe. Yeah, wow. I'm sorry.
What a brutal,
I'm very good at
regime.
It is, yeah, because there's nothing in my wardrobe like that. I would say I've been umming and ahhing over that I found it really hard to let go. If there is a piece of clothing in there that I have not worn in the last year, it's probably gonna go, because it just means that, you know, why is it in there? I don't think about it. I don't have enough space in my flat as it is. Someone else can wear it and take joy out of it. The thing I got rid of most recently, it were sort of a couple of dresses from Whistles, because I'm just not a Whistles dress person. I just am not. I don't know why I convinced myself that I would be able to be that. They're lovely dresses, but I'm just never going to be that person who wears frilly shit. So they're gone.
They're gone. Let them go to the universe. Wow. Yeah. This is... is terrifying. This is a terrifying conversation for me as a serial hoarder.
I know,
hoarder.
I know.
It's chilling.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams, so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Is there any era that you wish that you existed in or you would have flourished in for the fashion alone? Not historically, obviously, there's additional context going in there. But I mean, just for the clothes, for the look.
It's so hard. It's so hard to say because I feel like every decade that we move, I just feel that what we do in terms of tailoring and what we do in terms of, you know, so for example, at the moment, there are some designers who are doing the most amazing things like with structural dresses and draping and layering. I mean, it's just, I know this is such a cop out, but no, not really. Like, this is the era that I want to live in because I know that I'm absolutely in love with everything that I kind of consume. And every time I think I've seen it all or, you know, there isn't anything new to see, there will be something new that someone will come up with that will just completely blow my mind that they've done that. And I mean, okay, so random segue. I'm just starting to watch Below Deck, which I think the first season is based in 2014, which actually isn't that long ago. I mean, I guess it's 10 years ago. Even 10 years ago, I'm just looking at the fashion and I'm looking at the hairstyles and whatnot. And I'm just thinking, wow, like so much has changed and so much has evolved in 10 years. Mm. So I'm so sorry. I don't think that there is a...
No.
There is an era. Great. Really, yeah.
Great answer. I always think about that when you think of 2000, like the two... It, you know, my living memory being very aware of fashion. So from the millennium onwards... And I think about all the incarnations that Victoria Beckham's been through and how she does look the best now. She does look...
She does. And also, like, in terms of... I think especially if you look at women and you look at, you know, comfortability, we are in the most advanced time that we've ever been in where there are sort of fabrics, there's technology that is specifically designed to make clothes more comfortable for women. Mm. And that is something I think that has only evolved, you know, with time. And also women feeling as if they don't have to necessarily, again, you know, do that thing where they dress for the gaze of men who are choosing comfortability over, you know, wearing things that are uncomfortable, that are supposed to cinch you in, to give you a particular silhouette, to create a particular illusion. And also, we live in a time where there is enough space where if you do want to dress like that, you can. Like, it's absolutely fine. But what I appreciate is that is the choice for women to be able to do whatever they want and dress however they want. And for me, that kind of, that movement towards... you know, let's say the inclusion of like clothes being gender neutral and definitely androgyny. I think that allows me to sit more comfortably in my skin and not to be called things. Like, even as I said the word tomboy, I was like, ugh, I hate that word. Like, why did I use that? But it allows me to just sit in my own skin a bit more comfortably and not have to be defined by my femininity or masculinity, you know?
Mm. That's, yeah. I think about that a lot, is that I was definitely... was a tomboy growing up for, yeah, much want of, that's the thing, it's like for want of a better phrase. And actually, I think about myself, I'm like, no, it wasn't that I ever wanted to be a boy. I just, you know, I was this, yeah. I was defining what it was to be a girl and a woman in my own terms. And then it's so frustrating that the language of gender even comes into that. If I'm just defining what it was to be a person in my experience. Is there an item of clothing, and this can be a specific piece that you have, or this can be a, you know, a genre of clothing, like a shirt or something like that. Is there an item of clothing that you instantly put on and just feel great in?
I would say that, okay, that so that's not as easy for me to answer because it will depend whether it's something that I wear at home, whether that's something I wear when I'm going out. So I'm going to choose to answer it as if I'm going out.
Great.
So in recent years, you know, there has been, I think, a lot of this has been due to social media, which is that there has been a real movement of acceptance around being South Asian and wearing clothes by South Asian designers and sort of, you know, the fashion that comes from the Asian subcontinent, which has always been incredible. Mm. Like, it has always used the most incredible artisans, but there is definitely a sort of a blending of all of those worlds together that means that there are designers creating things that I feel fits who I am now. And to be honest, if I was, you know, when I sort of talked about being a kid and not finding things that really I felt suited me, I mean, to live in the era now is incredible because there is just so much choice. And so the outfits that I feel incredible in are by two designers. So one is a lady, her name is Aarti Vijay Gupta, and she specializes specifically in prints. So a lot of the prints that she uses are kind of artistic patterns that come from certain Indian tribes, for example, but they're so unusual. I haven't really seen anything else like that. And I've got a massive oversized jacket. Nope, that's a lie. I have two of her jackets. So, and whenever I put those jackets on, people always ask, oh my gosh, where's that from? But more importantly, it makes me just feel so beautiful when I'm wearing them. And because they're oversized, I don't even really have to worry that much about what's underneath because these jackets are just so eye-catching. So I would say it's probably her stuff, to be honest, her sort of outerwear I really love. But there is also a designer called Pyle Singhal who you would have seen on my Instagram, like there's sort of like a couple of suits that I have by her and she uses sort of raw silk and the way that her stuff is cut is for me that perfect balance between East and West. And you know, it's just a real, like every time I wear her clothes, this sounds so cheesy, I'm so proud to wear her clothes because I get to then represent a South Asian designer, but her clothes are also so beautifully cut as well that I feel great when I'm wearing them.
That doesn't sound cheesy. It sounds brilliant. It's beautiful. It's such a nice sentiment. I'm from Wales and it obviously doesn't have the strong cultural significance in that term, but like I love wearing something I know is made by a Welsh person and being able to shout about that, and it just gives me a link to my heritage, but in a way that's moving forward as well. That's like, this is what Wales is like now, and this is, you know, it's my way of sort of celebrating that. That's how I feel when I wear something by someone who's Welsh.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel you on that. I think also, you know, for me, so if we look at things historically, you know, it has been a really big issue that you have people, let's say Western, you know, design houses, particularly I would say at the luxury end of things, who have used, for example, you know, who've been, quote marks, inspired by India or used Indian artisans, but then don't credit, you know, where that work comes from. So recently, like Dior had an incredibly high profile, well-attended show that it held in Mumbai, right? And it was amazing that they decided to hold that show there. They used a lot of South Asian models and so on. But it is problematic that as a brand, it has a history of having used Indian artisans and not credited, you know, where that came from. And so for me, it's, that really is a reclamation of being able to, I think, where possible, like whenever I do anything that's, you know, promo work or whatever, it is to try and wear Indian designers where possible, because people will ask you where you got it from and then that's a talking point, right? But also because it still goes on today, you know, whether it's jewelry or whether it's clothing, where a lot of people will just not say where that work is coming from. And it's not to say that you can't do that, but my issue is when people aren't transparent around where that work comes from, I think.
Yeah, and it compounds all the other bigger issues of not just visibility and the economic impact of that, but, you know, what cultural shortcuts people and schemas people have for certain cultures. And if the shortcut isn't there, that like highly skilled, creative, you know, culturally impactful, then it's so much harder for that to break through to a mainstream and therefore the financial, but also the respect that culture deserves and that those, like you say, those artisans.
Yeah.
I'm going to be thinking about what you've been saying all night. Sorry about me going on and on. It's just very, yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. Let's talk about the future then. So do you see your style Is it locked in now, or do we see it evolving again and again and again?
It's definitely not locked in. I mean, I think the whole point is that it should be evolving. Even though I really love what I wear now, I'm sure I will look back on what I'm wearing in about 5 years and go, oh my God, I can't believe I wore that. So I definitely think that it's evolving, but it evolves because the world evolves and it changes, and I think that can only be a good thing. I definitely have a sharper appreciation for what my basics are, though. And I think having those locked in. So while I am conscious about how much I buy and what I buy and whether I really need it, and that is my contribution to being, to sustainability in terms of just not buying as much stuff and definitely redistributing things that I do have. I also know that, for example, something like suit jackets, I find so hard to find suit jackets that will fit me in the way that I want them to. So I can sometimes be opportunistic about, if I see one of something or a pair of jeans or whatever that I know fits really well, even though I may not need it in that specific moment, I might get it because I will know I have a stronger sense of what my basics mm-hmm. need to be and what they are. But in terms of, I would say, the future, I kind of actually came into my 40s being absolutely terrified that something would happen to my brain and then I would just start to wear lots of really loud colours and like bright prints, which I think other people pull off really, really well. There are definitely a few influencers that I follow who are just able to do it in a way that I know I can't. And I'm not saying that I don't wear colour, like I absolutely do. But I did worry about that, because I think it's also something that I feel that some of us gravitate towards because of that whole invisibility thing. And you just don't want to be invisible. But I knew deep down in my soul, that is just not the person that I am. So I just thought, oh my gosh, is something going to happen to me? Am I just going to be taken over by some spirit and just basically start to dress in a way that I never thought I would? And I just don't think that that's the case. I just think what is going to happen in the future is I will just keep refining and getting to a point where actually I hopefully buy less and less because I have a greater sense of buying things that I can use in more than one setting. Mm. And that I can, and also just buying stuff that lasts a bit longer, I think.
Yeah, that's the sort of clothing self-actualization we're all moving towards, isn't it? We're actually, we've got those, we know what suits our body, we know what we need, and we know what we don't need, and we can, go in and go, I'm going to get this, and I know it's going to suit me, I know it's going to fit, and one day I've got everything crossed. Is there an item of clothing, and again that can be an actual piece or just a type of clothing, that you can always see yourself wearing?
I definitely think that, so the look that I probably wear the most at the moment, so let's say if I'm going into town and I've got meetings or whatever, is a pair of trousers that I bought in Florence, and I really did not have the money to buy these trousers. Like, I had no business buying them, but they have more than earned their value in terms of how much I wear them. So they're these pleathery, slightly high-waisted leather trousers, but the actual material is really, really thin. So the way that they drape and the way that they fit is that they're not uncomfortable, they don't feel restrictive. And I literally could wear that with, a black vest or some vest of some description and sort of slightly oversized blazer. And that I could wear that probably until, it's time for me to go into a coffin, because I just don't see some iteration of that look for me where it's sort of slightly looser fitting trousers that still don't look like jogging bottoms, to be quite frank, but that look quite and don't look like smart, work trousers either, that have a bit of an edge to them. And definitely sort of, when I say oversized blazer, I mean something that has no padding or no structure in it, so that it's quite a loose kind of blazer, so you're still feeling really comfortable but you're feeling quite smart. I think I will probably wear some version of that for a long time.
So on the softer side and not the boxier side with the jacket.
Yeah,
love it,
because that is a look that, I do have sort of more structured suit jackets, and that's fine for work, But this one jacket in particular, I got it from a shop in America called Aritzia. And again, I had absolutely no business buying it, but I wear that jacket every week. And I bought it maybe three and a half years ago, and it still looks exactly the same as when I bought it.
Amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Penultimate question. Are there any trends that you're hoping never rear it their head again, either that you experiment with or that you wish to see on other people?
I feel really treacherous saying this because at the time I loved it and I didn't understand why everyone hated it, but it was that trend of wearing a dress over jeans.
Oh yeah, I remember a lot of Top of the Pops had that. There was a lots of girls. It was real shorthand for sort of manic pixie dream girl as well. Was being sort of like, I'm kooky. I've got a dress on over my jeans.
Yeah, I just remember it feeling so comfortable and really what I think I just wanted was like a baggy oversized shirt. I mean, funny enough, what I'm wearing today. But I remember at the time at university, because I lived with my three guy mates who I'm still friends with, who still will remember how, you know, because at the time they were like, that just looks hideous. Why are you wearing it? And I was like, no one cares about your opinion, man. And they still talk about it now, but I just said, I don't know. It just was really comfortable. What can I tell you?
Final question. It could be a sad one, but it's meant to be an uplifting one. So it's your funeral, and I mean, you've already mentioned what you're going to wear right up until your coffin in the previous outfit, but what would you like to wear to be buried in? What's the final outfit?
I think, because I hope I do actually get to purchase it in my lifetime, I just want it to be like head to toe Alexander McQueen, and I also want there to be a handbag, and I want there to be shoes as well. Like, I want the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I want there to be some kind of like high ruffly neck situation, but also, you know, just beautiful textures and fabrics, lovely little belt. Yeah, I just want everyone to be like, oh my God, I want to rob her grave and steal that outfit.
That's what you want, isn't it? Where people discuss, it's a shame to be burying that. That's when you know you've really done a good job, where they go, it's a waste.
It's a shame. Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, but you can't have it.
Corner bell there. Thrilled she's taking an Alexander McQueen handbag with her to the other side. I also cannot believe someone as stylish as that purges every 6 months. Oof, what a woman. Do you know what? Especially with the new year and things, I'm teetering on the edge of having a clothes inventory. I got this idea from the Who You Wearing stories. We asked on there if anyone had any clothes-related New Year's resolutions. There were some great suggestions on there. And someone said they were going to do, or they did a clothes inventory, and they were like, I've got 300 items of clothing. I definitely don't need any more. And I was thinking, I definitely have more than 300. I think I have 300 just for work, just sequin-related stuff. So I thought, right, I should do an inventory. But part of me just doesn't want to know how bad the problem is, which also tells you how bad the problem is. Oh, honestly, the thought of having a clear out every 6 months as well has just made my blood run cold. I do get rid of clothes all the time, but a full clear out like that, stuff you haven't worn, yikes. We had a lush message, by the way, from Zoe. Thank you so much for getting in contact. She said, I commented on Instagram, but I wanted to drop you a line as well to thank you for introducing me to the fabulous Rachel Boo. Oh, God, what a great episode last week was. I've been a Chazza shopper forever, and admiring the purchases of others forms a big part of my Insta habit, same babes. So I'm not sure how the algorithm has let me down, but I'd never heard of her before. I enjoy all your guests, and maybe as Rachel is a bit older, and Zoe says, in brackets, perimenopause is really messing with my body image, and focus so much on pre-loved clothing, this episode really shone for me. I knew it would. I knew it was going to hit so many, like pluck so many strings for so many different people. Zoe goes on to say, thank you also for introducing Pre-Worn, an amazing website which had miraculously escaped my notice thus far. I heard you on Insta Live yesterday say how you're reducing clothes purchases, and my own resolution is to not buy a single thing. Oof, in 2024. Buying pre-loved clothing cheaply lulls you into a false sense of security, but consumption is still consumption. I know, babes, but it's baby steps for me. She goes on and says, thankfully, I listened to the podcast on the 29th, so I managed to get a big pre-worn order in before the new year hits. I love All Killer. Who are you wearing? And I'm looking forward to seeing you on tour next year. Blew the name with that, Zoe. Zoe, what a great message. And also you've done what I do, where I'm like, I'm not going to buy anything now for... I've gone 10 months this year. I'm going to go 10 months. Normally it's 6. But because I've done 6 twice in a row, I'm bumping up to 10. And when I get to 10, I'm going to take stock and go, can I get to the end of the year and buy nothing new to the world? But buying anything at all, oh, I don't know. That fills me with, it fills me with all sorts of feelings, which is probably something I should deal with. But thank you so much for your message, Zoe. Also, if you want to get in contact, you can DM us on the Instagram. We are at Who You Wearing Pod. You will also see pictures of outfits of the people we've chatted to on the podcast. And you can message us on there, or you can email whoyouwearingpod@gmail.com. Now, in every episode, I talk about a small business that relates to the guest I've had on. So yes, when we're talking to Rachel, who is the queen of secondhand, I talked about Pre-Worn, a Welsh secondhand clothing business. This is a bit special, this one. So I was thinking about Porna Style, which is so sort of like chic and got great silhouettes, great textures, and just really sort of a good mix of being feminine without being flouncy, loads of clean lines, good cuts. So please let me introduce you to a brilliant company that makes really bold clothing in timeless and modern shapes. It's The Chemist. Now, Chemist is spelled with a K, so K-E-M-I-S-T. It's a London-based brand founded by Sade Akinosha, a self-taught seamstress and passionate businesswoman. Now, the whole ethos of The Chemist comes from Sade, and it's own your style, strut with confidence, and be unapologetically you. Now, I have a cohort set from The Chemist that I bought a couple of years ago now that I wore to a wedding, a very posh wedding, and it was one of those things that you wear that everyone's like, where did you get that one? Where did you get that from? And then you say, The Chemist. Loads of people haven't heard of it. So it just sounds like, because everyone else there was millionaires, that I was also a millionaire. And passing myself off as a millionaire is one of my favourite habits. So The Chemist does small limited runs of each piece. So it's not going to be, you know, you're not going to bump, chances are you're not going to bump into someone else wearing it. So they do these small runs of these pieces. And I would say they are quite spenny, but it's their statement pieces. They are really our outfits that say, I'm here. And they have such a confidence to the designs that I feel like you can't help but be confident when you're wearing them. The cut is so great. The quality of the materials of everything I've bought from them is absolutely brilliant. So the colours, the shapes and the materials that they use are this really unique blend, as I say, of feminine and masculine. I think they just make strong clothes for strong women. So please just have a little nose around their website and their Instagram. I feel like they're completely different to anything I've recommended before. They do a really good line in faux leather jumpsuits and backless dresses. There's some absolutely stunning backless dresses on there that I always lust after. But then I think, where are your tits going to go, Gary? Something's got to hold them up. But yeah, their leather jumpsuits are like really something special. Do you know what it is? If you want something beautiful for like, if you're like, I'm going to buy a new investment outfit for weddings and things like that, that is the website to go to. Do you know what would be great for? To be the wedding guest of an ex-partner's wedding. So they spend the whole day thinking I made a mistake, because that's the kind of outfit that I plumb for in my head. That's the website for you. So go and check them out. Chemist with a K. They're also on the gram and everywhere else. I'm going to be back next week with a penultimate episode of this series. I am chatting to influencer and activist Megan Jane Crabb. Can't wait for you to listen to that episode. Speak to you soon. I won't speak to you soon. Listen to me soon. That'll do.
Who Are You Wearing is produced by Joe Southard. The artwork is by Mary Phillips. And the music is by Annie Glass. This has been a Little Wonder production.